Imperial Leader, the life story of the foremost man of our time, Winston Churchill. The darkest days of the World War have been lived by an anxious world. The great German offensive has been begun, and millions of trained soldiers, automatons, have been hurled against the Allied front. Sir Douglas Haig's famous Back to the Wall order of the day has stirred Allied hearts, and the retreat of the forces of democracy has been halted. In London, at number 10 Downing Street...
Such are our plans, gentlemen. The Generalissimo, with the full agreement of the Supreme War Council, has planned the great offensive to begin in June. I have supreme confidence in the outcome.
And I.
Yes, yes, our plans have been well laid.
This year will see the end of the war.
Our equipment is magnificent. Munitions are pouring into France in colossal quantities. And in tanks, by heavens, Churchill, I recall that feat of yours. When was it? 1916?
March 1915. I ordered 18 trial tanks to be built for the Admiralty. It was, I'm afraid, an invasion of the Army Preserve, but I got over that by calling them landships.
I believe you kept the War Office in heavy ignorance, Churchill.
Despite the fact that I appropriated some £70,000.
Foresight, which has been its own reward. A great enterprise, that, Winston. But to business. You all have copies of the meeting of the last council. I want you to examine paragraph 14. In it, you will observe...
June and Prussia's great offensive begins. On, ever forward, go the Allied troops. On to victory. September, at the Ministry of Munitions.
What a month September has been. We break the Hindenburg line, then the Americans take St. Mihiel. And now, our offensive against the Bulgars. The end is in sight, I think, Monsieur Loucher.
And even if everything is not as hopeful as you think, you believe, Monsieur Churchill, that you will have no trouble in supplying guns and ammunition to continue the offensive?
Even if twice as much were required, we could supply it, Monsieur Loucher.
Ah, but you have performed a magnificent task, Monsieur. These tanks, they are superb.
We have plenty more, and are building them in hundreds. Our equipment for 1919 will be far in advance of anything yet seen. I have 2.5 million persons engaged in producing guns, munitions, tanks, and all the necessities of war in ever-increasing abundance.
Ah, what organization. Marvelous. You, Monsieur Churchill, are deserving of the highest honor.
No, no, Monsieur Loucher. The credit must go first of all to Mr. Lloyd George for his energy and foresight 2 long years ago. And next, to the men who labor day and night to bring forth the fruits of that magnificent conception. I am but the guiding hand, the pilot who steers a good ship on her course under the orders of a gallant captain.
Pardon, Monsieur Lecheur.
A message. Excuse me, please, Mr. Churchill.
Of course.
Mon Dieu! But this is unbelievable. Bulgaria has surrendered.
This is the beginning. The beginning of the end. Victory is in sight at last.
Cambrai, scene of so many epic battles, is taken by the Allies. Lille and Douai are evacuated. The Austrians are routed on the Italian front. The Turkish army is decisively defeated in Mesopotamia, and an armistice is dictated. Events move on with increasing tempo. The sun of liberty and of peace is rising in all its splendor. The dawn of November the 10th, 1918, sees a train which no timetable ever foresaw. It crosses the Dutch frontier and pulls in at Eisden Station, Holland's most southerly outpost. The startled station commander telephones the Dutch capital, The Hague.
Hello, hello. Yeah, it's very important. I say you must get His Excellency out of bed this instant.
Yes, coming now. One moment, please.
Hello. Hello, Excellency.
Yes, what is it?
The Kaiser is in Holland.
In Holland? What does it mean?
He has abdicated and seeks sanctuary with us.
What? Are you sure?
The Kaiser is on the train at my station. There is no doubt.
Well, tell him to wait while I consult certain people.
I have summoned this cabinet, gentlemen, because we are on the eve of great events. This morning, the German Chancellor, Prince Max, issued a decree announcing that the German Emperor had abdicated and that the Imperial Crown Prince has renounced the succession.
That means revolution.
It is all over.
It is all over. 4 words which speak a volume. It is all over. I can't believe it.
The German delegates seeking an armistice have left Berlin and should arrive in the forest of Compiègne today. The Kaiser will no doubt stay out of Germany for good.
What an ignominious end to a vainglorious career. This man, who claimed to be the vice-regent of God on earth, flees like a hunted being.
And he shall be punished. Punished for the crimes he has committed. But no more now, gentlemen. We will suspend the meeting until news is received from France. The armistice is entirely in the hands of Foch at the forests of Compiègne.
General Foch, I present to you Herr Erzberger, Count Probendorf, General von Winterfeld, and Naval Captain Panzerloff.
Thank you, General Degon. You will be seated, gentlemen.
Yes.
What is the purpose of your visit? What do you want of me?
We have come to receive the proposals of the Allied powers towards the conclusion of an armistice.
I have no proposals to make.
How do you wish us to express ourselves? We are ready to say that we ask the conditions of an armistice.
I have no proposals to make.
Valid then. I shall read out President Wilson's note in which he says...
Do you wish to ask for an armistice? If so, say so formally.
Yeah, that is what we are asking.
Good. Then we will read out to you the terms on which it may be obtained. General Begon, you will read the terms, please.
Very good, my general. Article 1. It is stipulated... That completes the terms, gentlemen.
Before we proceed further, I beg of you to agree to an immediate cessation of hostilities. A revolution has broken out in Germany. We are afraid of a Bolshevik upheaval.
You are suffering from a loser's malady. I represent here the Allied governments who have settled their conditions. Hostilities cannot cease until the armistice is signed.
Give us more time.
No. It is for 72 hours. It will expire on Monday morning, the 11th of November at 11 o'clock.
London, so dark only yesterday, and now to become once again a blaze of light and of life. Oh, what a tremendous thought. The world redeemed.
It's hard to realize. It's like standing between two worlds.
Remember that night at the Admiralty? I described the scene to you. Everyone was tense, waiting for the signal to go to war against Germany. To signal our fleets and squadrons across the world, commence hostilities against Germany. What a dreadful message that had to be.
Never again, I pray.
Never again.
Peace and happiness. I wonder what tomorrow will bring.
We must have faith and hope. And charity. Yes, that's so important. No more mistakes. No more weakness. And no more colossal armaments by any nations.
How wonderful to think of this little country of ours playing such a tremendous part.
4 years and 3 months. And now this unarmed and untrained island nation, with no defense but its navy, has endured against the strongest manifestation of military power in human record. This people has completed its task.
It's been a terrible time. But looking back, it's also been magnificent, hasn't it?
Yes, magnificent. Our country has emerged from the ordeal alive and well. Its vast possessions intact. Its war effort not waning but waxing. Its institutions unshaken. Its people and empire united as never before. Hazards and heartbreaks. And now, victory.
It's almost time.
Yes. Just a few minutes to 11. And then, the curtain comes down on this terrible drama, this tragedy.
The hour of 11 approaches. The minutes pass slowly along the western front. An occasional shell, an occasional burst of fire, tell that peace is not yet. Officers have their watches in their hands, and the troops wait with the same grave composure with which they fought. Men are too weary and deadened for their imaginations to rise to the great moment. For it is not at this time, but long afterwards, that the human mind grasps the drama of a crisis. Suddenly, the watch hands touch 11. There comes a second of expectant silence, and then a curious rippling sound, which observers far behind the front liken to the noise of a great wind. It is a sound of men cheering from the Vosges to the sea. After that, peace descends on the long valley. A new era has dawned, and the old world has passed away. Away, and Winston Churchill begins a new life of peace, a peace which is to be only the interlude between wars. But tragically, no one in the world dreams of the greater tragedy to come, save perhaps one obscure corporal now demobilized from the defeated German army. A new era dawns, and Winston Churchill, unaware of his great destiny, plans for a world of peace. A reconstructed world where men may live happily and work happily without the dread ordeal of war and sudden death.